Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long in studio at 520. The legendary Pete Jenkins will join us talking about him coaching with Andy Reid. And also, he's coached the three defensive kind of linemen that the Eagles have, and in particular, Jalen Carter. And he's got some unreal stories about Jalen. And he was first one to tell me about midseason, I think Jalen Carter is the best defensive tackle in pro football. And that came from Pete. At 5:40, Jeff Nowak, our Saints sideline reporter and sports WWL content producer, will bring us up to date on some of the things happening in Mobile at the Senior Bowl. And really, today was kind of the last kind of big practice session that you'll see. And Jackson Dart is a hot name at this point in Mobile. I've gotten a lot of calls about Jackson Dart over the last 2 days. At 6:30, Jake Madison will join Steve and Charlie talking about the Pelicans. And at 7 o'clock, it'll be our Senior Bowl Sound Bank interviews Jeff Nowak has done with a number of the players and also coaches at the Senior Bowl. Charlie, let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to David in Gulf Shores. David, you huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Maya, thank you all for the opportunity. Three quick points I want to make. First of all, thank God we don't have Marshawn Lattimore. I never did like him. I know Bobby loved him, and everybody loved him over there, but I never did think he was worth a darn, and he embarrassed himself in that Washington Commanders game, in my opinion. He was terrible, terrible, terrible. Bad attitude, bad penalties. I'm glad we don't have him. I never did think he was that hot. I know he's productive, but if he was available, but he was always hurt. So later on, Marshawn Lattimore. Number two, we got to get some talent evaluation. Buddy D used to talk about it all the time, Mike. You know he talked about that all the time, was talent evaluation. Where are we? We haven't had a good draft in almost 20 years.
Since 2017. I mean, I'm not, 2017, that was a really good one. The other one was 06. The first year, the first year, 06 and 17, with a two signature draft.
We're still talking about that. I know, we're still talking about that. My gosh. I mean, that shows how bad it's been. I don't know who's in charge of talent evaluation over there. And I mean, Jeff Ireland, this one, that one. All I know is whatever we're doing, it's not working. And it's just not, we never make a splash. You know, the draft is the key, and we're paying the price for it. And they better get this right, because they had 30,000 people on the waiting list for season tickets, and that's not the case anymore. Because I've got six tickets, and I drive in from Alabama for the games, and I'm a New Orleans native. And I go to the games. I bring my sons and everything. We have a blast. But, you know, I got calls from the Saints office called me this year and said, hey, you want to buy some more tickets? We have some available. And that's the first time I've gotten that call in 3 years.
David.
And it's going to start hitting them in the pot, you know?
David, I'll chime in on that. I know a couple people that we would talk to regularly that would drive in from Pensacola every weekend. Last year, they gave up the tickets. They didn't see the vision for this team. They called me in the offseason, and they were like, we're not going anymore. We're not excited about what we think the product's going to be this year. And if it's a 500 team or whatever, that's not what I'm spending my money on and my travel time. So, you know, that's got to get through to the Saints front office that, yeah, you have a loyal fan base and they love the Saints. They love them and they care about it. But you know what? You got to give them something to cheer about. And I agree with you 1,000%. Buddy and I talked about this so many times about it is about talent. It is about the best players on the team. When you look at it, who got the two most talented teams in the NFL this year?
Philly's right up there, man. You can make the argument with KC.
Right up there too, Charlie.
I know, but Philly's roster is
Is loaded.
And look at what Howie Roseman has done in the draft, Mike.
Howie's been a guy, and I didn't know this. Pete was telling me about it because Pete was with Andy Reid in Philly. And he had told me when they hired Howie Roseman, he was an intern. He was kind of a gopher guy.
Right.
And he said he worked his way up, you know, to be the general manager of the Eagles. He's never worked for anybody else.
It's really funny to do mock drafts for the Eagles each year because you're just like, what do they need? Like, they're so talented at every spot on the football field. I think the one thing that they needed this past year was DBs, and look what they get. They get Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean, two of the best rookie DBs in the entire league.
Think about when you pick corners and you get two starters. Now, they moved up in round one to get Cooper. But he would have been a first-round pick had it not been for the leg injury.
Yep.
And we talked about it during the draft process. The two guys that would get hurt would be Cooper, and then it was Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Same thing, because Kool-Aid went through the foot surgery. And teams are always sort of, man, you know, we're picking a guy that, you know, is coming off the injury, and they slide not a lot, but enough to move him out of round one.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, because it has been a year since it happened. Last year at the Senior Bowl, Quinyon Mitchell was making strides in Mobile.
Quinyon was the best DB in Mobile last year.
And then he gets picked by the Eagles. So if you're drafting, you know, players based off your scouting reports that you gather throughout a season, and then you kind of get assisted by the Senior Bowl, that's a good way of doing things. And the Saints have tried to do that at times. Like Taliese Fuaga was a Senior Bowl participant this past year, and he obviously looks like he's a slam dunk pick for the Saints. But like, just think of Quinyon, who the Eagles take him late in round one. He ends up once again being, I think, a candidate for Defensive Rookie of the Year. So they're doing great things. Harry Roseman and that front office is doing excellent, especially in the draft. And for the Saints, like you said, David, I agree with you 100%. If you're going to rebuild this roster and start refreshing it with the young talent that it desperately needs, there's only one way to do it.
That's the draft.
And it's the draft.
Because you don't have the money to go out and spend in free agency to get anybody. I mean, you know, you got what you can get. There's not a lot of money out there. And I never really believed much in this kick the can theory down, because eventually you got to pay the credit card.
Yep.
The bill comes due. Somewhere along the line, you got to pay it. And if you hit in the draft, you can afford to do that because you're paying football minimum wage.
It's not the draft that it was last year, Mike, with all the talented QBs or anything like that. But there are some talented blue chip players at the top of this class that you can grab, especially in round one. And
it's not as many what I would call top-heavy people in the draft. What I'm looking at is there isn't those clear, other than Abdul Carter, Mason Graham on the defensive line. Now, Jenty is depending on what you're looking at running back.
Mike, you have 20 first-round grades?
I got 21.
21 first-round grades.
I stretched it to 21.
21 first-round grades in this class, but a lot of scouts that I've heard talk about this class say that there is a kind of a gap, right?
It's a big gap.
And it's right around where the Saints are. It's basically just behind where the Saints are. So let's say the top 11 players in this draft. There's a little bit of a gap from 11 to 12. And then, as you mentioned, there's 21 first-round grades. So
you know what happens? From 22 to like 45, ain't much separation.
Nope.
That's where it becomes interesting late in round one and in the early part of round two, in which the Saints are going to be involved with also, about who is going to fall to you at that point.
And right before we had to break, David, I also wanted to give you props on the Marshawn thing. He got burnt by A.J. Brown multiple times in that game.
And then he got
the penalty for AJ Brown.
Fighting, and we saw that before him and Mike Evans.
You have an extra third, an extra fourth, and an extra sixth round pick from that Marshawn Lattimore.
Now hit on those picks.
Use those picks.
Hit on them. That is the key in all drafts. You can make all the trades you want and accumulate picks. If you don't pick the right guys, you're stuck in neutral. We come back. The legendary Pete Jenkins will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, the legend himself, Coach Pete Jenkins. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Coach, you're one of the few guys that, man, you can talk about it. You've been knowing Andy Reid a long time, got to coach for him and with him, and you and I talked about this before, but I'll let you tell our listening audience what makes Andy Reid so special as a coach.
Golly, Mike, I got it.
Now, I only got a few minutes.
How long is the show? let me start with this, Mike. He has a sense of fairness. I think it sets him apart from a lot of guys that I've worked for and been around and coached with. You know, he's truly fair to everybody. He's demanding now. He's demanding, and he holds you accountable, those things. But he is so fair to everybody, and that's players, coaches, managers. It doesn't matter. I think that's one of his real attributes. The other thing is he has a very even-keel personality. You know, actually, I worked for him during some hard times that he went through in his personal life. But you know, Mike, you never knew it. I mean, he didn't talk about it. He didn't bring it up. He was always so even-keeled. And you never see him get too high, and you never see him get too low. I think his fairness to everyone and that even keel of his personality are two of his greatest attributes.
Coach, I know you're close to Steve Spagnuolo, and Bob and I have talked about this. Sometimes I brought this up to Bobby that, you know, sometimes players aren't the right fit when they get picked somewhere and they go on somewhere else, and it all connects. Like we saw Zach Bowen do this year with the Eagles. It was the right fit with Vic Fangio and Woody Rand defensively. Yeah. It might not have worked somewhere else. It didn't work here in New Orleans at all. You know, he was a special teams guy. And you've been around players the exact same way. When Spags coached this team as a defensive coordinator, it was one of the worst teams in the history of the NFL, statistically, the way their defense was. Now he's going on with a shot to be part of a team that could be a three-peat champion in the Super Bowl, which has never been done before. Knowing Spags kind of tells us a little bit about his personality and how he's grown throughout the years.
Well, you know, Mike, everything you said was true. It just wasn't the full story. You know, I worked that summer in training camp that he was at the Saints. And it was the year, you know, what do they call it, Bounty Gate?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the Bounty Gate year. And when I came to work for training camp, Sean was already in exile. So, you know, it was really hard. It wasn't just hard on Steve. Actually, Mike, it was hard on everybody in the organization because, you know, Joe Vitt at that time was the head coach, and he served about a week or so, and they made somebody else the head coach. You never knew. It was really hard. You never knew who was going to be at practice and who wasn't because they were conducting the investigation into the Bounty Gate. So I would tell you this, and I don't mean to make excuses for Steve, but he or nobody else on that staff really had a chance. I mean, it was a difficult, difficult year that the players and the coaches went through there. During that investigation, he told me, you know, he saw Sean. Sean hired him. They were friends. They knew one another very well through pro football. And then the next time he saw Sean, Sean was firing him. So he did. He did. And if you look back, I believe I'm right on this. The offense struggled that year too. They didn't have, even Drew didn't have his normal year. It was just a difficult year. It should be torn off the calendar and thrown away. But I think that had an effect on Steve and his coaching year at the Saints. The thing that's impressive too with Steve, he's the only coordinator in the history of the National Football League who has won a Super Bowl coordinating two different defenses. He won a Super Bowl at the Giants, and then he's won the Super Bowls with the, you know, with the Chiefs. So he's very, very intelligent. He's a smart guy. He is really funny because I used to go in his office, Mike, and he was so dadgum neat. Everything was, you know, and I would tell him, I'd say, Steve, my office was next door. I'd say, Steve, come over here in my office. and let's finish this conversation, okay? I don't feel good about being in here.
You might be dirty in the place.
Yeah, I said, I feel like when I was a little boy, my mama would bring us places, and she, before we go in, she'd look around, she'd say, Pete, don't touch anything. Yes, ma'am. I felt that way about Spags. But I love the guy. He's a very, very spiritual guy. And really, he and his wife do so much for the communities that they live in and things like that. But he's a really good defensive football coach.
Coach, we've talked about Jalen Carter, so I'll ask you about Jordan Davis, because he does a lot of the dirty work. You got to work with him at Georgia, and you've worked with him away from it. Now, Jordan's a big man. I mean, and I'm talking about a really big man. Because we've seen Jalen, and you made the comment to me before, you think Jalen Carter's the best defensive tackle in pro football because he plays the run better than Chris Jones. And a lot of times we see the Chiefs will pull Chris Jones from the lineup on obvious running plays. So give us your rundown, having dealt with Jordan Davis, and you can't miss him, number 90. I mean, he is a massive guy, but for a big man, how well he moves.
He moves extremely well, as you said, Mike. So when he was a freshman, at Georgia. I was working there in spring ball, and we were in a staff meet one day. And Kirby said, he's a freshman, he's a true freshman. And he was actually overweight. He was bigger then than he is now. He was really overweight. And Kirby said in the meeting, he said, you know, we ought to think about moving Jordan Davis to offense. Okay. And my hand went straight up in the air. And he said, what is it? And I said, please, Coach, don't move Jordan Davis to offense. Please don't. I said, you will regret that because that guy has got the quickness and speed to really, really help you on defense. And Kirby, the next year, Kirby was joking with me in the that next spring about me anointing Jordan Davis. Who are you going to anoint this year, Pete? That's what he would ask me. But I could see he had that burst, Mike. He had that first step of quickness, a change of direction that you just, you know, it's you can't find enough people who are that big and have that kind of agility and quickness. He's a special player. And I tell you what I think, too, just watching him, the little I've been able to see him this fall on TV, I think he's getting better and better. You know, he was young when he came to Georgia. He was young for a senior in high school. And he stayed there 3 years. So I think I think pro ball is really slowing down for him. And I really think he's growing as I watch him now. I think he's getting to be a lot better player, you know, from week to week.
Jalen Carter, I'll give you a couple of seconds on Jalen because I know you talked to me about Carter when you had him in Georgia, right. And it was right. Like, I haven't heard you talk too many times about a guy like that in the college ranks, but he really has, Pete, developed into the best defensive tackle in pro football today.
I tell you, he is lightning in a bottle. And, I mean, the guy's got quickness and speed and change of direction. And on top of that, you remember, who was it he picked up that day? He did it again last Sunday. I saw him.
He picked up Jaden Daniels because there were people on Georgia was like, don't throw him down because he picked him off his feet. And he did the exact same thing to Jaden again in the playoff game.
He is a blessed athlete. I'm telling you, he's got power and quickness. And I mean, you just don't run across many like him. And I wanted to mention this guy to you too, Mike, for you people that the audience, there's a boy 93 that plays on that defensive line, number 93,
Milton Williams,
Milton Williams. Yeah. And he is a Louisiana Tech boy.
Sure it is.
Yeah.
And he was a disappointment early, Pete. He was a major disappointment early in his career, and then all of a sudden, it has hit with Milton Williams as a football player. And I'm glad you brought it up, because it was a guy that, man, early on, a lot of people thought, this might not work.
Yeah.
And he now has become...
He's doing a good job.
A really good, really, really good job.
And I'm not trying to connect these two, okay? But I've had a chance to work with him for the last couple of summers. And, boy, I love the kid. And look, it's hard to give him enough work. I mean, he's so hungry to do good. And, I mean, the guy is there early. The guy leaves late. I've been real impressed with him, and watching him play this year, he looks like he's coming into his own. He's had some really good pressure on the quarterback, and I think he compliments Carter having him in there, you know. So I just wanted to mention him, being a Louisiana Tech guy. I think he's becoming a real contributor for him.
Coach, before we let you run, I want to get your thoughts on Jalen Hurts making his second Super Bowl appearance. And, you know, Mike and I have talked about Jalen in the past and how much of a hardworking kid he is. His work ethic is fantastic. You know, this being his second Super Bowl appearance, and Bobby had been saying earlier in the week that the first time around, and I agree with him, he outplayed Pat Mahomes. He didn't get the win, but he played just as good, if not better, than Patrick Mahomes. And so this is his next chance to get that Super Bowl ring. Just want to get your thoughts on Jalen Hurts and your time with him.
Well, you know, of course, I didn't work with him anything, but I was working at Alabama, you know, when he was there. Bo Davis, our D-line coach here at LSU, recruited him. He was a guy that was in Bo's area, and his dad was a high school coach. And Bo would tell me about this guy. You know, he'd tell me, he'd say, "Coach, this guy's work ethic is off the charts." And I, you know, while he was there, I thought he did a great job at Alabama. I really did. And you know, even when Tua started playing more, you know, Jalen was always ready to answer the bell. You know, he comes into the national championship game. I don't know where you remember it, but he ran a quarterback draw that really, you know, helped win the football game and everything. But, you know, I have a lot of respect for him. And the guy's tough as an old boot. And his daddy, Bo, used to tell me that, you know, a lot of the guys that were his age were out having fun, doing this, doing that. This guy was lifting weights because his daddy was a hard-nosed guy, or he is a hard-nosed guy. So I'm a big fan of his. I'm like you. I think the guy plays – he plays a game, and, you know, he's come a long way as a passer since Alabama. I thought he was more of a thrower at Alabama, but the guy does a good job of throwing the football, and I'm a big fan of his. I think he'll be a real thorn in the side of the Chiefs Sunday week.
Pete, we'll get you back, and I told Charlie I'd have you tell him this story, but we kind of short on the time, about when you guys came here to play the Saints, and Andy Reid and Mike Sirio set him up food-wise, but that's a long story.
Oh, boy.
He thought a muffalata was a big sandwich.
Yeah, he said, "Well, that big old sandwich was good."
And he ate it all in one shot. Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Go ahead, Coach.
He's got an appetite, Coach Reed does, and you know, he's so funny about it. You know, he really is. He eats a salad and. At midnight, eat 13 Hershey bars, and I get to me. But he is such a, you know, and I think the advertisements that he's doing on TV now, you know, I think it's a little lot of people real know he's got a great sense of humor, and he's the king of the one-liners. I mean, the guy can hit you with a one-liner and drop you to your knees. He's really, but I purely love the guy, and I don't know if there's a better person walking the face of the earth, to tell you the truth. So, but anyways, we'll get into the food next time, okay?
Oh, we will do it. Coach, thanks so much for joining us. Always love to have you on. And I told Charlie that story already about he thought that gumbo was a soup. But I'll let you tell the whole story later on. Thank you, Coach. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Coach Pete Jenkins, man, got some great stories. Over 50 years coaching.
A muffalata is just a sandwich.
And,
huh?
And he told me the story. He said, man, Mike Cirio sends him this huge muffalata. And he's like, man, Coach, man, that big sandwich was good. He ate the whole thing in one sitting. So Andy got a bit of an appetite with him. We come back, we'll have on with this Jeff Nowak covering the Senior Bowl out in Mobile right after this break. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. We have on our Oakwood Hard Jewelers Talk and Text line, Saints sideline reporter, and also our WWL digital content producer, Jeff Nowak. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Jeff's at the Senior Bowl covering. Man, all of America's there, Football America watching. Jeff, a lot of talk, and I know you and I talked about this even before the Senior Bowl cranked up. Jackson Dart, and I think a lot of people have a peeping eyes on how well Jackson Dart can throw the football. He's always been a guy to like to press the envelope. He wants to throw a deep downfield. He'll do that. He'll pass up an easy throw of 8 to 10 yards to try to throw that 35-yarder. Now, that gets you in trouble, but I think Jackson Dart's a guy that has made some cash this week in Mobile.
Yeah, and if you look at this quarterback class, I think he's probably, and you talked about this going in, he's probably the guy, if anyone has that kind of, you know, late offseason climb, you know, like a guy like Bo Nix did last year, and all of a sudden everyone's saying, oh, probably second, third round pick. All of a sudden, you know, he's going in the top 15. If anyone's to do that, it's probably Jackson Dart. And the reason is he's accurate. You know, like you trust where the ball is going when it leaves his hand. And, you know, he's a good example of a guy. I think he had some struggles early on as he got more comfortable with some of the receivers he's working with. He really, really started to lay some nice passes in there. They were working on red zone today, which was interesting because, you know, a guy like Taylor Elgers, when we talked about him yesterday, yeah, you know, Canadian football at the 20-yard end zone. So you watched him struggle a little bit, and a couple of his passes, like, well, if he had 10 more yards to work with, that's probably a catch. But no, I thought Dart really handled that well, and I think that's a good area to look at and see, okay, how confident are you really? Because those windows get really tight, you know, and that's where you can see, okay, what receivers can get open in a phone booth, and who needs that five-second, you know, crazy release off the line to beat somebody. And, you know, I thought Xavier Restrepo, a guy we talked about a lot, yeah, you know, he handled it well. But no, I think Jackson, yeah, I think you're right. He has earned himself some money this week.
Give us a little bit of insights on Trevor Etienne. Trevor's a guy, you know, covered both him and his brother. He's not as fast as older brother, but man, he's short, he's squatty, he's really powerful from the waist down to break out of a tackle. And I think in this draft class, it's pretty thick at running back. And I think a lot of those guys will go from sort of late in round two into the fourth round. If I'm the Saints, I got to take a look at a back in that range. I think Trevor Etienne, because of his power skills and also can catch the football pretty well coming out the backfield, I think is a guy to watch. Again, he started out, you know, where, you know, he was part of the transfer portal, ends up at Florida with Billy Napier. Then he ends up at Georgia, had some injuries last year, but I'm a big fan of Trevor Etienne.
Yeah, I think his stock has suffered a bit just because he is the transfer guy, right? He's been at all these different schools. And it's been hard to kind of establish a profile at, you know, as he's kind of moved around. But you watch him out here, I think he was the best running back out there today. You know, there's been a handful of guys who have flashed. Donovan Smith out of Michigan has been really solid. But, you know, you said it there. I think what stood out to me throughout the course of these few days is the pass catching, is the ability to shake a linebacker on an angle route and create that quick separation over the middle of the field so a quarterback can lay it in there. And I think that's when you watch guys out at the Senior Bowl, that's always a question. Like, who has the real ball skills and who's kind of a, you know, a body catcher? Who's surviving the catch versus going after the ball? And, You know, you see a guy like Trevor, it reminds me a little bit of Chase Brown a couple of years ago. You know, not a guy who's going to blow you off the field with his athleticism, but he's stocky. He can you know, burst through a hole. He can get open. He can catch the ball. And I think he did have a really solid week.
Earlier in the show, Jeff, Mike and I were talking about the tight end class, and you know, it feels like those top four guys are kind of solidifying themselves, at least for Mike and I's opinion, is with Tyler Warren and obviously Colson Loveland. Neither of them are out there, but then Mason Taylor and Elijah Arroyo have really stood out at the Senior Bowl so far. But I wanted to get your thoughts on Harold Fannin Jr. from Bowling Green, who's a guy that I think a lot of people have maybe higher on their draft boards.
He hasn't looked good.
Well,
Joel.
here's my kind of idea with him is that the numbers that he put up are eye-popping at Bowling Green. Like, he was their receiving attack.
Yeah, he was.
He led the country in receptions with 117 this past year, 1,555 total yards. But then you kind of look at his build, you're like, is he really an NFL tight end, or is he just kind of a bigger receiver? That's kind of my question is, like, I don't think he's going to play on the inline in the NFL level just because he's not big enough. But his reception numbers and the totals that he was able to put up at Bowling Green was impressive. However, you're going up against different competition at the Senior Bowl. So what have you kind of seen from this guy so far? Because he is the ultimate enigma to me. I don't know what he's going to be at the NFL.
Yeah, he's tough to gauge, right? You're talking about 6'3", 238. That's not a tight end.
Nope.
Correct.
Right? You know, he's basically Jaden Higgins with a few extra pounds on him. And that's why I have a hard time saying, you know, he had some great play. He had a one-handed catch today that, you know, is making the rounds. And he's that type of player. He's that type of receiver. But you see this happen a lot where guys get into the NFL and they're kind of tweeners. And, you know, they can make plays in the passing game, but, you know, you don't trust them on the line. You don't trust them in line. You know, Juwan Johnson is a similar build, if you want to look at it that way. You know, he probably, you know, if Fannin can bulk up a little bit, I like his chances to be kind of that move tight end. A lot of teams are looking for that type of player. But I would say he has a good bit to prove. And that's where I see a guy like Mason Taylor, it's a lot easier to see him project. I was talking to a few people about Mason today, and one of the things that I think is pretty clear with Mason is he's already big. He's already the size you would want, the prototypical size, and I think he could put on 8 to 10 more pounds comfortably and still play at the pace that he wants to play at. I don't know if Harold Fannin can do that.
You know,
there's
a
few players, right? And there's a few players at the Senior Bowl that I have the same questions about at a few different positions. A guy like Tez Johnson, right? He's 156 pounds. You can't play in the NFL.
That's not even like Devontae Smith was slim, but he wasn't 150.
What? So. Even Devontae's a little bigger.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And he's still 170.
You know, Tank Dell is a good example, right?
Yeah.
Tank Dell's 164, and Tank Dell has had two major injuries in two seasons. So, yeah. Like, there's a few guys that I think showed up at the Senior Bowl, and I really would have liked to see them show up at a more NFL-ready weight. And I think, you know, a guy like Tez Johnson, he's prioritizing speed, and I understand that. I just don't know if you can play at that size. So, you know, that's one of the things that's kind of holding me back from really pumping the Harold Fannin hype train right now.
Jalen Milroe, I know you got to talk to him. Jalen's the ultimate enigma because sometimes he looks so good throwing the football, and in other times he's El Stinko throwing the short stuff. He's much more accurate on the deeper throws than he is on the short throws. And a lot of it is his mechanics and everything else. Now, here's the thing that I like about Jalen. He's a super hard worker. He's a great leader. He's going to give you everything he's got. Now, the mechanical part, he's going to have to learn. But I can build a package to use him very early in his career as a runner. And, man, can he throw a deep ball. He really can hum it down there. And just try. I think for him, he's going to be the ultimate fit player. It's not going to work for just anybody. He's going to have to go to the right team, right place.
Yeah, you know, I would qualify him as struggling a bit this week, and the accuracy was the issue, and that was the issue we knew going in was going to be a problem. Sorry, a problem. You know, he can lay that ball down, you know, kind of the open sideline, right? He's not as accurate throwing across his body, but when he can throw kind of with his body, he can lay a deep ball in there.
Yeah.
He hit Jack Besh was his best friend. I asked him about Jack Besh. I don't think we have time to get into the clip, but, you know, he's like, that's a dog. Like, one of the things that became clear throughout the week is Jalen Milroe wants to throw to Jack Besh, right? If I'm drafting Jalen Milroe, I might draft Jack Besh at the same time because that connection was legit. And, you know, I honestly think, you know, I think Jalen going out there and balling out and having the week of his life might have worked against him in the end, because I think the best case for him is going to be being a day two, maybe early day three pick, and being in a situation where he's comfortable and a team is comfortable letting him develop. If he climbs up and is a late, you know, ends up in that Lamar Jackson spot late first round, there's going to be a lot of pressure on him to deliver right away, and I don't think he's going to. I think he needs time. But, you know, like you talked about, he's a great locker room guy. He's a worker. I like his approach, and I think he can develop. So we'll see how that goes for him.
I wouldn't be surprised, because his offensive coordinator, former one, is with the Browns today. And, okay, we all know that, you know, they're going to have a changeover at quarterback in Cleveland. And you can't play Milroe year one. But I do think that there's a connection there. There's always a connect the dots. I wouldn't be surprised Jalen Milroe will end up in Cleveland in on a day two pick.
Yeah, not at the 102.
On a day, oh, no, not yes. at the two pick.
You're right.
No, but a day two pick,
yes.
I think that's probably the spot for him. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it, bud. I know we got a lot of sound that you got. We'll play it in the 7 o'clock hour. Appreciate it.
Sounds good. Y'all take care.
Thank you. Jeff Nowak, Saints sideline reporter, our WWL digital content producer. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Want to thank Pete Jenkins. Always a great interview with Pete. And Jeff Nowak, who's been at the Senior Bowl in Mobile all week long. Got a lot of sound you'll be hearing from Jeff. I know that Steve Geller, Charlie, y'all handle it in the 7 o'clock hour, but he got a lot of interviews today, and you'll hear from Jalen Milroe. He got to talk to him and have that interview, and he's an intriguing prospect. You see some people say, I think he might go late in round one. Other people, man, I wouldn't pick him in the fourth round.
Yeah.
So that's the big difference.
I like the Browns idea, though, Mike, and I think that if the
Tommy
Browns...
Reese.
Yeah, I agree. But I think if the Browns decide to take him, they might try and trade back up into the first round and get that fifth-year option for him. Because, as you said, the first year is a redshirt year.
That is always the thought process about a quarterback. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break.